Welcome to month four, Investable ETR briefing. And the period we're presenting today covers the trading period from the 1st of August to the 31st. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services that are supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. We call those micro to medium-sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buys these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. And in doing so, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And that's the margin that creates the yield or return for your investors. So credit exchange also provides credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finances, finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principles, that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way that a bank earns interest. At the end of August, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 67.69 million. And this is a 40 million euro increase on the previously consistent number for the past year now of about 17.5 million. So this trebling in value relates to new accounting policies surrounding our shipping assets. Until July of this year, if we bought a ship, we valued it at the price that we paid for it. For example, later in this briefing, you will see that we purchased the Azeri gas chemical tanker and paid 3 million euro for it. And therefore, it would be entered in our accounts at 3 million euro. However, this is not an accurate reflection of the transaction. Firstly, as with most of our shipping assets, we're acquiring them at roughly 50% loan to value, or LTV. In the case of Azeri Gas, the total purchase price was 5.7 million. So the originator, our disponent owner, as they're referred to, they paid 2.7 million towards the purchase price and credit paid the balance. So our auditors and advisors agree that the value in our accounts should show the value at 5.7 million. So we booked the 5.7 million as an asset and put the 2.7 million the originator paid as a liability. Ultimately, when the 3 million is repaid with interest, the value of the assets in our accounts will equal the liability to Azeri Gas as the disponent owner, and we'll transfer the ownership to them and net out the liability and assets position to zero. In addition, credit reports its income on a deferred income basis. This means that if we purchase an ETO for 10,000 euro and we expect to make 100 euro from that transaction, we do not accrue for this in our P&L. We wait until the ETR is fully settled and returned in cash before we book that 100 euro in the profit and loss. As with the LTV up until August, this deferred income was not in our accounts either. In the case of Azeri Gas, the deferred income will be more than 1.1 million over the next 3 years. When you apply the full value of our assets as opposed to the LTV and also add the deferred income component, they add more than 20 million to our asset position. So before returning to the briefing, I'd just like to explain a little bit more about the importance of the LTV position that we take. So unless the vessel has strong charters to specific debtors, we aim to buy the vessel as close to 50% of their value to de-risk the transaction as much as possible. We have some projects at 75% LTV and others at 25%, but overall the aim is to average 50%. What this means is that we have assets where the disponent owners have their funds invested at 50% of the ship's value and they take first loss. So Credit Exchange may only have paid 50%, but we are 100% legal owners of the vessels. If there are any disputes or non-payments, we will simply repossess the vessel and sell it to recover the investors' funds. Unlike any other asset type, ship repossession is a relatively simple affair under maritime law, where the port authority simply arrests the vessel when it is portside. The disponent owners, our originators, are fully aware of this when they enter into these contracts with us, and they also fully understand their first loss position. For this and many other reasons, we like shipping assets. We like the return they provide to our investors. We like the fungibility of the assets in a fluid market. And excuse the pun, but you understand it properly. And to round out this point, I'd like to reiterate how our trading position in this market mirrors that of Berenberg Bank, which I mentioned last month, which is the second oldest bank in Europe. And like us, they have a policy of never buying new ships and prefer 10 to 15 year old vessels too. Returning to the RSA figure, as you all know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium sized business or the originator and Credit Exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, this is for 1 year. For example, let's say an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 in order to run their business. They will come to Credit Exchange much like they would a bank, and they apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the $250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days, they must agree to sell us $250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and the revolving sale agreement or RSA will therefore be for 1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. This commitment to sell the 1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is then documented in the RSA contract. And as stated, Credit Exchange held 67.69 million of these RSA contracts as at the 31st of August. Apart from the assets finance, active RSA contracts continue to remain short as trading patterns, speed of settlement, and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycles increase with more commodity and shipping-related transactions in our business. Trade finance in its purest form, i.e. finance that supports commodity trades and shipping-related transactions, continues to be a core activity on the trade desk. In May, I mentioned the significant increase in leasable assets during 2020, and that we had purchased six ships. We would again be significantly increasing the asset side of the business as our shipping market develops. The 5.7 million Ziri Gas is the seventh vessel we purchased this year. In August, we sold one of the six vessels into demolition and liquidated our position in full and at full value. That same originator is in the process of purchasing three more vessels that should conclude by the end of this month, early next month. Last month, I also mentioned a specialist towing vessel that was being used by the National Petroleum Construction Companies in Abu Dhabi, and at the 11th hour, having agreed all the funds would flow through the exchange, the originator sought to change this basic requirement, and we therefore declined to proceed. That same deal has come back to us because they've agreed that they will process all the vessels income through us as originally agreed, and now we're happy to return to this contract, albeit events seem to have changed again, where they have an issue with the Port State Authority and changing the flag. Assuming that gets solved, we will trade that transaction. But it's transactions like this NPCC vessel and the Azeri Gas that prompted the reopening of the leasable market. And these shipping assets underpin our primary focus, being that of trade finance, which are or ETR that are used by companies to facilitate international trade in the movement of finished goods and commodities between different countries. Since March, I've been including the Baltic Index, being the index for shipping, and I think we'll continue to do that from now on. Earlier today, it stood at 4,717, and as reflective of the market we've been reporting on since the last year. From prior briefings, the index has been below 3,000 since May of 2010, or 11 years ago. So this is starting to look somewhat like 2003 or 2005, and that a healthy recovery is in progress as I speak. Similarly, we've also included the future freight agreement or FFA markets in our briefings on a number of occasions this year. And like the Baltic Index, these derivative financial futures provide a prediction on the cargo transport prices ahead of time. They're a good indicator of market expectations for the next months, quarters, and up to two or more years ahead of time. So in addition to reporting the Baltic Index, we will also report on the FFA prices on the Panamax 4TC, which is the Brazil-China route, that we have multiple vessels on any given day. Recently, we've seen the Panamax 4TC FFA rates as low as 18,000 and highs of over 36,000. And today, rates for October and for quarter four are 38,000 and 37,000 respectively. Looking further out to 2022 and 2023, the rates are lower at 23,000 and just short of 15,000, which seems like a sell-off on the future, but not when you consider that rates of 23 or 15,000 are still highly profitable when operating costs are 9,000 per day, meaning the owner is making 6,000 a day or roughly 2 million a year. So the predictions are stable and good and will allow for generous profit taking for ship owners in the coming 1 to 2 years, in our estimation, for at least that period. What we're seeing continues to be record-breaking yields that, as I said earlier, haven't existed for more than a decade. Last month, I talked about the real impact that supply and demand issues in shipping are having on millions of businesses worldwide, and how it was causing a shortage in microchips and the knock-on effect on a raft of industries. I also spoke about the issue of shortages and weakening capacity, and how more than 40 ships were forming queues further and further away from major terminals like Los Angeles and Long Beach, and that this queue had never in its history been higher than 30. A month later, and there's now 60 ships backed up at those two terminals. I also mentioned the inventory to sales ratio and the relationship between the end of month values of inventory to the value of monthly sales. A ratio of 2.5 indicates that the retail stores have enough merchandise on hand to cover 2.5 months, and globally it remains at 1.25 and has only ever been at this level back in 2011, so again 10 years ago. Until July, China has been sucking in raw materials and bulkers and pouring out finished goods for export by container ships. During August, their steel consumption dropped by more than 10% and sent shudders through the iron ore and shipping markets combined, where there was a notable drop on the time charter equivalent, or TCE. That's the daily rate that ship owners charge for their vessels. We're looking at some trades in those markets as I speak. And even with the 10% drop in demand, the TCE rates have already bounced back from that news. Also from last month, Walmart and other US retailers have been chartering in ships to deal with order backlogs and concern about adequate stocks for Christmas. Clearly, with the significant savings per household and the anticipated boom in spending at Christmas each year, coupled with those savings that have been boosted by COVID, closer to home, the well-known department store on the British High Street, John Lewis, has become the latest retailer to go on record about chartering ships to try and combat this year's extreme container crunch, as they're calling it. The company told Evening Standard, it is, and I quote, going very hard and really fast to make sure Christmas gets saved for our customers. Almost comedy-like when you go on to say, when they go on to say, get out there and buy the toys now. But on a more serious note, in May, we had the Ever Given. Now we have the completely different Evergrande that has been headlining the news in the past month. Some financial people I've spoken to say that the Evergrande and the other smaller property companies in China combined, even with their half a trillion of exposure, won't dent the Chinese economy. I'm not sure I agree. I don't believe necessarily that pent-up consumer demand will overcome any issues there. So we're keeping an eye on developments in China to see if their economy is as stable as people claim, because in shipping terms and in terms of cargoes, as opposed to offshore and smaller tanker business, China sets the market trend. So let's see how things pan out over the coming months. Returning to the briefing, it states that there was 45.96 fully allocated, and this is a bounce back from the 30% drop in July and back above the figure for 44 million in June. We continue to be thankful and fortunate they were able to sustain this market level figure. And what this fully allocated figure means that the exchange held almost 46 million of ETR on the 31st of August. This means there was roughly 46 million worth of investors' funds in the market on the last day of August. And if you add that number to the 67.69 of RSA or revolving sale agreements, that represents future orders we have not yet filled of almost 114 million. It's quite a jump when you consider that this figure was 50 million last month. But remember, we're now including the full asset values and the deferred income on those orders too. With or without the accounting policy change, overall, since April, there has been a strong and consistent growth in the ETR market, and overall, things remain medium to stable. Moving on to the next figure, August briefing shows that investors redeemed 1.26 million. And at first this glance, this is not consistent with withdrawals for the same period in prior years. However, on closer examination of the number, almost half of these were withdrawals were from investors coming out of Investable and reinvesting their funds in Leasable. Once that's understood, the investor redemptions in August are consistent with July, prior months, and indeed prior years. The ratio of money in versus money out in August, the ratio fell back to a rate of 2-1. So this has been the standard for quite a number of years. In June, it was 5-1. In July, it went 4-1. Now it's back at 2-1. So even though we've increased the yield during September to 3%, it hasn't really impressed. So we'll have to rethink the 3% rate. Certainly, I think so in October. And it looks more likely that we'll be putting it back to 2%, as it seems to not be having the desired effect. As you know, these funds are a mixture of prior private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRBs, and PRSAs, along with private investor savings. The current economic and social situation continues to be good for investable ETR, with continued liquidity and stability in our market as we enter the second half of the year, or as we enter the fourth quarter of the year, I should say. This brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration of 111 days. And this number, as you know, is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration, or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. Apart from the spike in February, March, up to 121, overall, since the end of last year and or early January of this year, it was holding stable at around the 90 mark. And here's another spike of 111. It's a 20% jump to the negative and is significantly off the exchange's average credit index of 75 days. And the credit index, as you know, is a cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. At 111, it's going in the wrong direction, and hopefully it's nothing more than a spike from earlier in the year. The last figure in the paragraph, of the paragraph one of the briefing, shows the trading results of 46 point, excuse me one moment, 46 point, sorry, I've lost my 45.98, excuse me, in August. And this is a little over 11% lower than the figure for July. Nonetheless, there's another medium result for the month. But as you'll see, at the end of August, we were still slightly behind on our results for the same period last year. Year on year, when considering year to date, the overall performance to August of 2021 is 7% behind the figures for August 2020. And we remain off target for the year's budget. Below last month's trading figure of 22.07 is the Treasury performance of 17.36 million. And this is an exact match for the month, meaning we spent 17.36 million and we collected 17.36 million. I can't recall the last time these two figures were the same. There's nothing really significant in the fact that they're equal, other than to say that Treasury continues to perform their collections duties month on month. And in this particular month, they spent the exact same amount of money on the trade desk as Treasury collected on funds returning back to us. As always, trade desk and Treasury continue to monitor the trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the controlled parameters set down by the credit risk policy that governs the risk and general exchange trading policy. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show that companies or organizations, show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money on the 31st of August of this year. And as usual, you can see the HSE continues to hold their slot as they've done for more than a year now. We can also see the repeated appearances of Atradius, Vodafone, and Cork City Council. Musgraves has returned after several months' absence, and the Department of Defence is a newcomer from a fashion designer by the name of Deborah Veal. We've financed her on a number of occasions over the years, and this Department of Defense listing relates to our work on the design and delivery of uniforms to the armed forces in Ireland. Again, as in July, the Shepherd Group from the 1890s in England remained with us for their second month, and the Shepherd Group are more readily identified as the Portacabin people. Moving to the top 10 rated investibility on the right-hand side, there's the regular appearance of MediaMath, Paramount 21, and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and none of them were investment grade or IG, and therefore they don't have an investment grade rating on the 31st of August. So the remainder of this list shows a sample selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to demonstrate the significant change in what has been a typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE here in Ireland and the NHS in the UK, along with others in the health and community, remain stable at 14.81. Since Q2 of last year, this pie chart has a repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And as per prior statements throughout last year's briefings, this is more wholesale and food-related retail-based. As you may well know, organizations like Tesco, Musgraves, and others may make regular appearances on our top 10 largest holdings. But looking to the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well and has remained between 35 to 40% for the past 12 months. It spiked in July and held firm in August at 43.7 and was most likely due to people holidaying at home, as we all enjoyed the unusually good weather in July and again in August. Food and beverage held steady at about 7%, with the business and service sector climbing somewhat from 8.5% in July to almost 10% in August. Manufacturing dropped almost 27% from 9.15% down to 6.67%, and maybe that also has something to do with the good weather and holidays during last month. Construction peaked in June at 14%, and like manufacturing, was off some 20% at 8.89% in August. Again, seasonality has to be a feature there. There was no other significant changes recorded in any sector on this graph, and as you will know from the pie chart, it continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system whilst we wait for the adoption of our credit classification that's a component part of the new credit machine software. This is due and remains due for H2 of this year, and Q3 has been the data quarter of the circa 1 million transaction records that have been imported. The real testing began on Monday of this week. We're still behind target on delivering this new trading system pretty much since the beginning of the year, although we're not concerned about the final outcome or indeed our confidence in its delivery and its ability to completely replace our current trading system before the year end, albeit it's shaken a little recently. We will ultimately meet our objective of turning off our old systems, but I'm not necessarily convinced it'll happen before year end. It would be great if the IT guys prove me wrong. Let's see. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in August 2020 versus August 2021, you will see that August 2021 versus August 2020, we were up more than 30% on last year. Nonetheless, overall year to date, August 2021 was 7% behind year to date, the same period last year. As mentioned at last month's briefing, PPE trades were a strong feature of 2020's trades, whereas that type of trade has been very limited in 2021. I've stated many times, PPE was not a sustainable trade for us. Like COVID, it spiked and appears to be dissipating over the subsequent 12 months, and for the exchange to be trading at almost the same levels this year as last year, with little or no PPE trades, means we have a stronger and more resilient market for the short to mid-term. I discussed the investors' withdrawals and the credit exchange index of 111, and to finish on our performance in August, the largest single trade was a trade finance deal of 1.32 million. From the earlier part of this briefing, I mentioned the Panamax 4TC benchmark route, and this particular trade was another Brazil-China grain trade. As explained in the investor brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa €2,000, but we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro, and this particular transaction is 1.32 million. FFA contracts, as prior trades have done, where our originator hedges any increase in cargo rates ahead of time. This freight broker uses credit to purchase the FFA derivatives and fix the ships at future dates, and this gives them a competitive advantage even in a volatile market. As mentioned at other briefings, this is also one of the reasons why the rollout of the credit machine trading system is so important. It will enable us to track and trace multiple FFA derivative deals and cross-match the electronic FFA trade to the physical shipping trade much more smoothly and easily. Finally, let's move to the trend section of the briefing, where you can see the investor's yield or buy price during August started at 2.105 and ended below 2.090. As I've been saying for most of the year now, with the negative yield of circa 1% on bank deposits, the investors are getting a yield that is now over 3% better by buying exchange trade receivables on demand, cash equivalent offered by just putting the money in the bank. As you know, the rate changes daily and can be checked anytime on the investable.com website homepage. We've moved past the 2% yield in late April, early May, and in August we reopened the lease of a market. This has helped somewhat, but the availability of good quality supply continues to be outstripped by the demand from investors. As you saw earlier, we've already pushed to 3%, and this spike in the investable rate hasn't had the desired effect. We'll discuss this after the briefing. But to finish up, you'll see a repeat of the active RSA or revolving sale agreement of 67.69. And that concludes this month's briefing for August 2021. Thank you.